It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
A new chief of staff sworn in, an incoming White House communications director escorted out.
The president announced on Twitter that there's no chaos at the White House.
If you want to see chaos, come to my house with three preschoolers. This doesn't hold a candle to that.
General Kelly will go down in terms of the position of chief of staff, one of the great ever.
People are getting hammered on Obamacare.
I am like 1,000% with Donald Trump on this. We should be politically horsewhipped if we don't try again.
The United States ready to respond after shocking reports that North Korea's arsenal could potentially strike anywhere in the U.S.
America is a Goliath. North Korea, they can't even feed their own people. This is a Lilliputian little flea.
Jim gave it his all, and then he just kept giving. Thank you for your service and your sacrifice.
You know what? That was the opening of Fox and Friends this morning. I thought it was so good, I wanted to use it. So there it is. They sort of covered the day's events in a very fun, friendly kind of way. Sandy Rios in the morning with you. Yeah, so much has happened since we last spoke, as always happens. You will know that Anthony Scaramucci has been removed or is no longer the White House communications director. The thing that I noticed yesterday in the press conference with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I wish I had a montage or a count of how many times she was asked. Now, does this mean with the entrance of General John Kelly into the role I can't think of the role. It's the one that Ron Priebus had. With him taking that role, will everyone answer to him? Will they have to? Will his daughter have to go through John Kelly? Will Steve Bannon have to go through John Kelly? Who's going to go through General Kelly? Will there be a pecking order? I mean, everyone asked that question, and I started saying to myself, why are they making? It's as though, you know, we know that they don't really care about bringing order to the White House. It's not exactly like they're doing their part to make sure things go well. And so finally it occurred to me that they want to sort of continue this narrative of chaos. Now, look, President Obama and others removed their chiefs of staff several times. It's not that big a deal. I'm sure if it had been a big deal, we would have heard about it. They would have asked Barack Obama similar questions, but of course they did not. And they want to make you think that the White House is in chaos. And yes, I think there has been some turmoil. But turmoil is not, which is better? I just ask, you've all been in situations, whether it's been in your workplace or even in your church, where things languish. People are in the wrong positions. People are inept. People are dishonest. People do things they shouldn't do. And people that are in the decision role don't do anything. So that's, I guess, supposed to be better. I think action is good. Too much of it, of course, you know, you have to watch it and not go over the line. But it's all very interesting. Griff Jenkins brought the report this morning on Fox about Anthony Scaramucci's removal. Let's listen.
The mooch is out as retired Marine General John Kelly establishes order at the White House, showing the communications director the door. And President Trump tweeting, it was a great day at the White House, and predicting General Kelly will go down as one of the greatest chiefs of staff in history, and noting he's starting with a good base in light of the challenges.
We have some interesting situations that we'll handle, North Korea, Middle East, lots of problems that we inherited from previous administrations, but we'll take care of them. But overall, I think we're doing incredibly well. The economy is doing incredibly well. So we're starting from a really good base.
The change brings a new chain of command. Everyone goes through Kelly now. Even Steve Bannon, Jared Kushner, and daughter Ivanka Trump will answer to him. As for Scaramucci, the White House says he will not have a role in the administration, as the president felt his comments were inappropriate.
He does not have a role at this time in the Trump administration. The president certainly felt that Anthony's comments were inappropriate for a person in that position. And he didn't want to burden General Kelly also with that line of succession.
No word on Mooch's replacement, although the website The Daily Caller is reporting exclusively this morning that senior advisor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, may be the next comms director.
All right, he took the words right out of my mouth because I was just getting ready to tell you that Kellyanne Conway is rumored to be the next communications director. That would be phenomenal because the communications director manages all of the messages that go out of the White House, disciplines them, words them in the best way possible, or at least guides the wording of that. And so Kellyanne would be great at that, and because that's what she does. You know, when you see her on television, Kellyanne has a very winsome way of presenting information. So I think that would be a great pick, but we'll see what the day brings. And we're going to come back to that because George Grassley is going to be joining me at 8:20, and George has been around Washington for a long time. He's the chief editor for Conservative HQ. That's Richard Viguerie's organization. And George and I are going to just talk together about what we're seeing and what we think about these staff changes. Meanwhile, lots of things are happening on Obamacare. You've probably been hearing that there are people coming forward. Lindsey Graham has a plan. You heard a little bit in the clip a few minutes ago about his statement that he thinks the president's right, that the Senate is, whatever his words were, should be called up on this for not accomplishing what they might accomplish. And Lindsey Graham himself is offering a suggestion that all the money go back to the states, be block granted, so the states then can map out their own kind of health care. That's a good idea. That's a better idea than many that we've seen. I guess my hesitance about that would be that still means tax dollars then would have to be ginned up and sent out to the states. And I'm not sure about that part, but I'm not the expert on that. And we'll follow up with that once we know more detail. Also, Rand Paul is offering a solution. He is suggesting, in fact, he's saying that the president is considering signing an executive order, or orders, plural, to allow the creation of associations that would allow organizations to offer group health insurance plans. So that would free up the market. And Senator Paul says the president can do that, and he says that the president is considering doing that. So that's another possibility that we might hear about. Also, I mentioned this, but Peter Ducey sort of expanded on it. There's something else the president can do, and it's pretty ironic. Let's listen.
It sounds like President Trump may be getting ready to repeal Congress's sweetheart deal. Tweeting today, quote, "If Obamacare is hurting people, and it is, why shouldn't it hurt the insurance companies, and why should Congress not be paying what public pays? Lawmakers and their staffers have been getting 72% of their premiums subsidized by Uncle Sam as part of an Obama-era arrangement to cover the high price of insurance for congressional staffers forced onto the Obamacare exchanges years ago. And President Trump has the ability to undo those subsidies using the Office of Personnel Management, or OPM, because that's the agency President Obama used to set them up."
I think the president would be absolutely within his rights to cancel the Obama rule that conferred this subsidy on Congress. Other Americans who were in these exchanges are not getting employer subsidies.
Insurance companies are also waiting now to find out if the cost-sharing reduction payments they've been receiving to help cover low-income Americans will soon stop as threatened.
The court here in D.C., a district court, not usually a friend to Republicans, said this is an illegal payment. Why should American taxpayers continue to bail out insurance industry?
But Democrats don't see this federal help as a bailout.
This is not bailing out insurance companies. This is about having stability in the private sector.
And there's new word, the HHS Secretary Tom Price could circumvent Congress by taking the teeth out of Obamacare himself, stripping the requirement that Americans pay a fine if they don't have insurance.
President Trump did sign an executive order allowing HHS to waive the individual mandate again, so that's still an option, right?
all things are on the table to try to help patients.
One thing the White House doesn't want on the table, votes on anything else until Obamacare is addressed by the Senate.
In the White House's view, they can't move on in the Senate. In the people's view, they should move on in the Senate. They should stay and work and figure out a way to solve this problem.
That was a great report by Peter Doocy. And I'm here this morning, 2 days of optimism in a row. I can't believe it. There must be something wrong. But I actually am encouraged by these suggestions that are very real possibilities of how to take care of the American people and provide them with actual health care, not just a piece of paper that's worthless. Technically, I'm covered, but I can't pay the deductible. I can't pay the copay. I have to pay these horrible premiums, but I have insurance. You know, that means nothing if you can't get care. And so I'm just hoping that we can solve this in a way that helps our people and does not put them under the burden of the big thumb of federal government controlling what we can and cannot do with our money in terms of taking care of ourselves. With a provision to help people that just can't take care of themselves. I'm not against that. And I think, you know, Medicaid was put in place to do that. It's been very effective. But we just don't need to expand it to cover healthy, capable people who have money, which is what they did with Obamacare. So there are lots of things that the president can do. And, of course, this whole business about Congress getting congressional staffers and members of Congress getting a sweetheart deal because of an order that Barack Obama wrote, an executive order. This has been a buzz in Washington since this happened. A lot of discussion about this, but I think the Obamacare issue was so large that it got lost to the American people. But this is something that President Obama did just to add a sweetener. He exempted or added, you know, these subsidies to congressional staffers and members of Congress. They don't have to have the same situation. Heaven knows they don't have to. They have Cadillac plans through Obamacare, the highest end plan that they don't even have pay any kind of a copay, I don't think, on those plans. And we reimburse them, I think, like up to 70%. And that's something that the President Obama decided to do. And it is certainly true that if we take that away, they will likely have a very different view of retaining Obamacare as the health care plan for the United States of America. A couple of things. The Washington Post, I'm sorry, I have to laugh because I think this is kind of funny. You know, the stories about Russia have faded a little bit. Of course, Bob Mueller is still investigating, you know, that potential link between the Trump campaign and Russia. But the press, I think, has kind of run out of words, and maybe CNN has too. It's just getting like it has gotten nowhere, really. It has in terms of, it's still dangerous because of Mueller's investigation, but I think in terms of public perception and just truth, it's stumbling along. But the Washington Post found yet another story this morning, and here it is. Trump dictated son's misleading statement on meeting with Russian lawyer. And the story is something about, you know, after this thing broke that Donald Trump Jr. had met with this Russian lawyer affiliated with Fusion GPS, which is funded by the Democrats. You know, it's just it's a scandal. That scandal's not reported, but his meeting with them, of course, that was the horrible thing. I just will repeat what Jay Sekulow said, reported in a statement that he gave back to the Washington Post. Apart from being of no consequence, the characterizations are misinformed, inaccurate, and not pertinent. That was Sekulow's statement in response to this. They did. It's like how long is this article? Let me see. It's 7 pages long on Trump dictating son's misleading statement on meeting with Russian lawyer. It's just amazing. It is amazing how desperate they are to make that case. All right, when we return, George Rasley will be joining me. He's the executive editor of Conservative HQ, which is a great publication, which I often cite. And we're going to talk about this stuff, he and I together. And so I think it'll be interesting, I hope. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Hollywood has been making superhero movies for a long time, but in the last few years, the sheer volume of them has increased dramatically. There's often more than one out at the same time. So, what is it about superheroes that fascinates us? The details change from film to film, but the plot lines don't. Someone who is stronger than everyone else battles against evil and saves humanity against all odds. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that, in a nutshell, is the gospel. Colossians 1:13 tells us that God rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves. In fact, you could make the case that Jesus is the only real superhero who ever walked the earth. You can get Anchor Devotional delivered to your home in print monthly. Visit getanchor.com.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Ashley Schaus is very close to her younger sister, Hannah, who has Down syndrome. From day one, Ashley told her boyfriend, Will Seaton, she and Hannah are a package deal. Ashley has always made sure Hannah was included in activities. She will also be Hannah's guardian when the time comes her parents are unable to care for her. So, when Will decided to propose marriage to Ashley, he first got down on one knee before Hannah, offered her a ring, and asked her to be his best friend forever. After she said yes, Will turned his attention to Ashley, offering her a ring and asking her to be his wife. She was quick to say yes. I'm guessing when Ashley and Will get married, Hannah will be in the wedding party grinning from ear to ear.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
MTV, the cable music channel that broadcasts everything but music, is going gender neutral. It's all part of MTV's effort to attract a bigger audience and become relevant. So in the spirit of inclusivity, MTV is going to neuter its iconic Moon Man. When the VMA Awards are handed out, winners will receive a Moon Person trophy instead. MTV President Chris McCarthy waxed poetically to the New York Times regarding the nonconformist future of the network. They say they're developing a new television show called We Are They, documenting those who do not regard themselves as male or female. In other words, the sex and gender revolution is about to be broadcast into living rooms across the fruited plain. You know, MTV's new gender-free Moon Person has a lot in common with the Academy Awards' genderless Oscar statue. Both represent the emasculated pinheads running Hollywood and the music industry. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
10 days ago, Anthony Scaramucci was introduced as the new White House communications director. 10 days later, he's out of a job. The president announced on Twitter that there's no chaos at the White House. How would you describe what has happened over the course of the past 10 days? Obviously, you will agree with your boss, the president, that there's no chaos, but how do you explain that not to be the case?
I think it's pretty simple. I've said it before. If you want to see chaos, come to my house with three preschoolers. This doesn't hold a candle to that.
Just to be clear, that's not an open invitation to come to my house. But if you guys want to schedule babysitting time, I'll be happy to work that out.
All right. You know, I have to say, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is doing a great job as press secretary. I was sort of hard on her at the beginning. I thought she wasn't a good choice, but she really was. She's got her dad's wit, and she's commanding in her own way. It's just kind of amazing, and she's funny. And so, anyway, that's what happened in the press conference yesterday, where the press was doing their best to present the Donald Trump administration and the White House as being in total chaos. And so I've asked George Rasley to join me this morning because George is the senior editor of the Conservative Review, which is Richard Viguerie's organization outlet. George has been in and around Washington, as Richard has for a long time, has served in various posts in government and knows whereof he speaks. He's a great writer. I often cite Conservative HQ and put those articles on our Facebook page, and you've read them many times. And I've asked George to join me this morning so we can just talk about what's going on. Good morning, George. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Sandy.
All righty, so let's just start with the lead story from yesterday, Anthony Scaramucci being removed. Where should I start with a question? Do you think that was intentional, his short term of service?
Well, I kind of doubt it, but there's been a lot of sort of social media speculation that Mooch was brought in to take out Priebus and the leakers and so on and so forth. And I've actually worked at the White House, so I don't think that was the plan. I think Scaramucci's problem really was that, and this is not uncommon when high-level people are hired sort of at the personal direction of the president or vice president, they come in and they think they work for the president when, in fact, they, you know, report through the chief of staff to the president. And I can understand that Scaramucci felt that way, but when you have a chief of staff, particularly one as capable and as experienced as General Kelly, you can't have everyone else on the staff running around the chief of staff to the boss. And I think ultimately it wasn't Scaramucci's foul-mouthed rant to the New Yorker that got him. It was his unwillingness to follow the chain of command, which is, you know, pretty essential in a White House.
You know, it's essential in running anything, a company or an organization. Yeah. I mean, we've both dealt with that. But I guess the thing that made me curious yesterday, you've heard me express this already. I found the press, you know, obsessing yesterday over the order. Now, will Trump's daughter be able to access? Will she have to go through John Kelly? Will Steve Bannon have to go through John? I mean, just there must have been, I don't know, 15, 20 times, 15 probably, that question was asked of Sarah. And you know, George, that they don't give a whit whether there's order in the White House. They like the chaos. So why do you think they kept obsessing over that? And then people sort of pick it up and they start talking about it. Why were they obsessing over that?
Well, they're trying to feed their own narrative, in essence, is, the media, particularly the swamp media, the establishment media, doesn't report the news. They try and make the news. And, if they could get Sarah to say, who I agree with you is doing a great job, to say, Ivanka's got to go through Kelly to get an appointment with her dad, you know, that's the headline. And, it's just absurd.
Yeah, it is. Well, anyway, they kept doing it. And then people, of course, started repeating it. But it just was very curious to me. I guess we've been around the block too many times to fall for what they do. And they do set the narrative for all the news media and then make it a big deal. And I guess they couldn't think of anything better. So for that, we should be grateful. Yeah. Let's talk about Kelly. Because, look, George, there's no question General Kelly is just a man among men. He really is. I yesterday reported on his statements in praising of two Marines who had been killed just 4 days after his own son had been killed in the Middle East, I think in Iraq. And he's a real man's man. He doesn't call attention to himself. But I'm assuming you think he's a good choice. Let's start with that. Do you agree he was a good choice for chief of staff?
Yes, I do. I think he's a great choice for chief of staff. And the principal reason I think he's a great choice for chief of staff is that he's not a politician. He's a leader and a manager. And, you know, by setting the example that he does of competence and commitment to the goal, presumably that's going to be the standard by which everyone on the staff is judged.
Did you hear the report yesterday that allegedly Kelly had called James Comey after President Trump fired him to say how upset he was about it? Did you hear that?
I did, and I didn't give it any credence. You know, and this stuff is practically made up by the media.
Well, you know what went through my mind, George, was how would anybody know that unless maybe FBI Director Comey let it be known? And then I thought, all right, so let's say he did do that. He leaked that out yesterday in order to create a little chaos of his own and his own defense. But then how would Kelly receive that? I would think I would not be happy about that, would you? If I'd just been appointed chief of staff and then the FBI director leaked a private conversation he had had with him?
Yeah, well, fortunately, Comey is the former FBI director now. So, yeah, I mean, that says more about the leaker than the leak, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. And so I'm thinking, well, maybe General Kelly, if this is true, and it's true that Comey leaked it, which why wouldn't we believe that, since he has already openly said that he leaks stuff to his friends in the press? It would not comport to Comey's advantage, and I think that it's probably going to backfire on him in that. There's another issue with Kelly that I want to talk to you about, which will kind of pivot into something that you just wrote about. This whole business about countering violent extremism, the CVE program, which I've spoken about at this mic several times, and the latest was yesterday. John Kelly was not terrific on that at Homeland Security. Would you agree, George? How would you describe that?
Well, I would agree that he was not terrific on that, in part or in large measure, I think. And, of course, this is only, pardon me.
It's all right.
Trying to drink coffee and talk at the same time.
You can't do that.
It doesn't work too well.
No.
He inherited that program and a lot of senior staff who were behind it when he came to the Department of Homeland Security. And there is a natural tendency to not simply dismiss all the work that went into that program. But at the same time, I see no evidence that he actually bought some of the underlying premises of the program, which was, for example, that American servicemen who returned from the Middle East wars represented a terrorist threat.
Yeah, and pro-lifers.
Yeah, and pro-lifers and people who believe in the 10th Amendment and, things like that. So, everybody hoped when he came in there that he was going to simply, on day one, cancel all of Obama's stuff. But that's really not how government or particularly the military works. There's a process of review and analysis of the facts before you actually do something, which is why some of these things have taken longer than we conservatives would like. I mean, even at the EPA, where things are moving fairly quickly, they haven't undone all the damage that Obama did. They're kind of taking it one step at a time. And so, I wasn't surprised that Kelly didn't come in there at DHS and undo all of the bad stuff that Obama does. Naturally, I was disappointed, but, not particularly surprised. And I didn't see it as sort of devastating walk back of Trump's plans and policies, but rather a methodical approach to doing what Trump wanted done.
Okay, so now General John Kelly, as of yesterday, is the White House Chief of Staff, but of course he left his post as Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. And let's talk about that, George, because, and that we've already pivoted to that, really, because Department of Homeland Security's really deadly program, I think, from both of our perspectives, would be this countering violent extremism. And you just wrote about this, and I want us to talk about it a little bit more. Let's flesh it out, because it's a little bit obscure. And because it has such a complicated name, even though you go over it, until you brand it in people's minds, they don't really immediately comprehend what it is we're talking about. So recap what that is, if you can.
Well, what the Countering Violent Extremism program really does is scrub our real problem, which is Muslim extremism. Well, not actually Muslim extremism, but Muslims following Islam, out of our anti-terrorism programs, and makes it a policy of our government to look at everyone who disagrees with the liberal mindset as a potential terrorist. And so, as you pointed out, and we just mentioned a minute ago, people who are pro-life or people who are 10th Amendment or 2nd Amendment believers are accounted to be potential violent extremists in the same way that Muslim hate preachers who call for the annihilation of Jews and Christians are violent extremists.
And at the same time, they scrub the words jihad, Islamic extremism, those were just scrubbed from the program. So they just revert to everything as violent extremism. And we've seen that in the language of the Obama officials and in his out of his mouth, too, that it's always just violent extremism. It has nothing to do with Islam. So this program has poured millions of dollars then in having these community outreach partners who are always, it seems, Muslim apologists, like Council for American...
they're violent extremists.
but they're working with us, you see. Yeah. And so it's really an insidious program. And you point out that person who's lobbying and did lobby for this job before General Kelly was appointed to it was congressman and is now lobbying for it, is Congressman Mike McCaul. Speak to that, if you would, George.
Well, Mike McCaul... congressman from Texas, is the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. He is soft on illegal aliens and amnesty. He's, as far as I can see, and I follow this very closely, demonstrated a total lack of understanding of the threat that Muslim terrorism and Islamism presents to constitutional liberty and the American homeland. He was totally behind Obama's Countering Violent Extremism program, had a bill to essentially make it law as opposed to policy, has supported and facilitated the millions, if not billions, of dollars that have gone into this thing. And, he is 180 degrees opposite on most issues from where President Trump was during the campaign.
Well, I can't underscore how bad the judgment, whether intentional or not. You know, after a while, you have to say it's intentional. We have pictures, of course, of Mike McCaul meeting with the Council on American Islamic Relations. He's made some bad associations, and he's made some bad decisions, and I don't know at this point how he could be ignorant about it. I really don't, George. And so
he's on the other side, and... his staff people have left the Hill to go to work for these organizations that promote the CVE program or to teach at universities where this approach to the problem of Muslim terrorism and jihad are taught. And, at some point you got to say the guy's on the other side, and he is.
All right, so with that in mind, what do you know anything about his chances of landing this new secretary post? You know what, let me let that question dangle for a second. And George, can you stay with me a few more minutes?
Sure, sure.
All right, let's keep talking about all of this. There's more, I want to talk about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and there's no want of conversations we could have. But when we come back, let's talk about what you think about his chances, meaning McCaul's chances of being appointed DHS secretary are, and who the other names might be that are being considered. This is Sandy Rios. My guest is George Rasley of Conservative HQ. He's the senior editor. He's a great writer and tons of experience. I always enjoy George's perspective, and I think it's a really good one. I agree with him. Well, maybe that's dangerous, George. We agree most of the time. But we're going to put this article that we just were referring to on our Facebook page, Say No to Representative Mike McCaul as DHS Secretary. It spells out a CVE, and you can share it and read it. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In a Las Vegas speech, former Speaker of the House John Boehner admitted what many have known for some time now. He insulted the Freedom Caucus, calling them anarchist knuckleheads, because they oppose everything. No, John, they oppose your deceptive agenda. There's a difference between politicians and statesmen. Politicians live by polls. Statesmen live by principle and stand on conviction. People of conviction always frustrate spineless weasels like Boehner. Thank God for the Freedom Caucus. May their tribe increase.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is John Riley. Join me for In God We Trust, Miracles in American History, Amazing Stories of Answered Prayer, featuring historian Bill Federer.
For most of America's history, he's blessed us and we've thanked him. We got him on our coins, got him on our pledge, got days of Thanksgiving. But now, no matter how much he blesses us, we're like running away and kicking him out of everything we can find.
This 30-minute radio special reveals how our nation was changed because of reliance on God and prayer. Join us this Wednesday morning, 11 Central, on American Family Radio.
I want to say congratulations to the American Family Association on 40 years of ministry.
Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council.
I cannot imagine what America would look like had the American Family Association not been here. I greatly appreciate Don Wildman's vision and his son Tim for carrying that vision forward. So join me in congratulating them on 40 years of ministry, serving the Lord, and serving America.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website twholyland.com for more information. twholyland.com, or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The death spiral of Venezuela, induced by Hugo Chavez and his handpicked successor Nicolas Maduro, has just entered its terminal phase. To the destruction of the economy, the resulting horrific privation, and the murder of over 100 people protesting the regime's growing despotism must now be added another cruel injustice. Maduro engineered a fraudulent vote effectively to destroy the last vestiges of democracy in his country. President Trump rightly warned of intensified sanctions if the Venezuelan dictator went ahead with his referendum. Some relatively modest ones have already been instituted. Now America must take steps to impose real costs on Maduro's government. The place to start is by terminating further imports to the United States of Venezuelan crude oil and exports of gasoline to that country. Such transactions amount to life support for the regime and can no longer be justified. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
General Kelly's firing of Anthony Scaramucci, who as communications director will be chiefly remembered for having entered into the annals of the presidency an unprecedented volume of public profanity, shows a core function of the White House chief of staff, namely the need sometimes to protect the president from himself.
You have the worst job in Washington because your job is to catch all the javelins that are intended for the old man.
The men who've served as White House Chief of Staff include some of America's most accomplished public servants, Vice President Dick Cheney among them. Yet it is James A. Baker III who held the job twice, most notably during Ronald Reagan's first term, who is considered the gold standard.
If they can't get the president, they want to get the Chief of Staff. So you walk around with a bullseye painted on your front and on your back.
The last military man to run the White House staff was General Alexander Haig, who was moved over as NSC deputy roughly halfway through the Watergate scandal. Some historians believe the Machiavellian Haig helped maneuver Nixon out of office, but he was credited at the time with preserving order amid collapse.
I, Gerald R. Ford, do solemnly swear.
Then came the Ford presidency, in which Haig's tenure as chief lasted 7 weeks. Chris Whipple is author of The Gatekeepers, How the White House Chiefs of Staff Define Every Presidency.
Gerald Ford had a model of White House governance that was very much like Donald Trump's, with advisors coming and going, nobody empowered as second among equals, no chain of command, and it was a disaster.
All right, that's the first part of James Rosen's report. I enjoyed that so much last night on Special Report. Let's listen to the last minute of it. James Rosen.
The man who held the job in Bill Clinton's second term said a background in the armed forces was helpful.
My first responsibility, frankly, was to develop a chain of command. My military experience was probably more valuable to me than my political experience.
All analysts emphasize that the one thing a successful chief of staff will possess is something that can only come from his relationship with the president, true primacy over the rest of the White House staff.
Bryant, you know, right? They don't care about, right? He's like this political guy that turned out to be a superstar, right?
Veterans of the job predicted trouble for Reince Priebus 8 months ago, when his hiring was paired with an announcement that Counselor Steve Bannon would enjoy equal footing with Priebus on the organizational chart.
Co-CEOs is a problem. There's nothing wrong with a diversity of opinions in the White House and perspectives, but I think the White House runs well only if there is one chief of staff clearly in charge.
In comments in today's New York Times, Jim Baker advised General Kelly to focus less on chief and more on the of staff part. Chris Whipple advised him to demand pre-clearance, Brett, of every tweet that the president posts.
All right, James Rosen on Fox last night. George Rasley is my guest. He's the senior editor of Conservative HQ. That report must have conjured up lots of memories, George.
Well, it did. When I worked at the White House for Vice President Quayle, I had run his inaugural committee. I knew him for many years prior to joining his staff. We were friends. He'd been to my home. Our parents were acquaintances through the newspaper business, but it never occurred to me that I was going to just stroll over to the West Wing and walk into his office unannounced or send him a paper or anything like that without it going through his chief of staff, who at the time was Bill Kristol. So, yeah, you got to have a chain of command for things to work.
Oh, yeah. All right. That was just interesting history. I love that. Let's go back now. We were talking about potentially a replacement for the Secretary of DHS, Department of Homeland Security. So, George, do you think that Mike McCaul, who you and I roundly discredited, and you do in this article, for good reason, on his really inexcusable endorsement of the Countering Violent Extremism program, do you think he has a chance to be nominated?
Well, I think he has a chance, and that's why I wrote the article, to remind people of just how closely associated with Obama's policies the guy is. if I were to be head of White House personnel and send a resume to the president for that job, it would be Chris Kobach, who is Secretary of State in Kansas and who is already vice chairman of the Voter Fraud Commission. And so he would be my number one choice for that job. I think he understands the problems. He has a record of coming up with policy solutions to deal with them. So he would certainly be my first choice.
Do you expect, as I do, that with Reince Priebus gone, because we had so many establishment appointments under Reince's you know, isn't the chief of staff kind of basically over hiring George, maybe not directly hiring every person, but over the whole system of hiring?
Yeah, and the guy that he put in that, and Priebus put in that position as head of White House personnel is somebody, John DeStefano, who is very closely associated with Priebus and with John Boehner. And so, you know, as I wrote when the appointment was announced, you know, his job was to fill up the Trump administration with establishment political figures and people from the Hill. It certainly wasn't to facilitate Trump supporters and conservatives into the administration. So with his patron gone, why, we'll see how things work out as far as who heads up White House personnel or who has the say-so, if you will, on some of these personnel decisions.
Yes, and we should also repeat, I will repeat, that so many good names with great resumes have gone into that White House since Reince was appointed chief of staff and have never gone anywhere. You know, Mutual Friends of Ours, huge organizations that have spent hours of vetting people, putting lists together of really great candidates, have just been ignored.
Yeah,
And so we really have had a really horrible, I think, staffing of the White House, and that explains a lot of, you know, a lot of the leaking. Let me just ask you a personal question: do you think Reince Priebus is one of the has been one of the chief leakers?
Well, with no evidence whatsoever, I will speculate that the answer to that question is yes, and simply because some of the stuff that's come out could have only come from someone that was in the room and some meetings that had very small attendance. So, yeah, I mean, and that it was quickly apparent that one of his top assistants was a major leaker, and she was adiosed out of there, you know, within the first couple of months. And so I see no reason to believe that her boss wasn't also a leaker.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see, won't we? As the days unfold here, of course, it does not go without notice that Reince issued his resignation last Thursday, he says, and it was never leaked. That issue was never leaked. No one knew about that. Yeah.
That's, to me, very good evidence.
Yeah. All right. I actually am feeling kind of optimistic, George. I just told my listeners, this is the second day in a row I've been optimistic. It's really, you know, build an altar. I don't know, because I'm usually not optimistic, but I am. But I look at the Rasmussen Daily Presidential Tracking Poll, and the president, President Trump, has slipped below 40% approval. So these press attempts, swamp attempts to discredit his presidency are actually being successful. What do you say about it? Do you think that, I mean, Rasmussen is a pretty fair poll, I think.
Well, I think it is a pretty fair poll, but I don't credit the so-called daily tracking very much because it's really more of a reaction to the day's headlines. And so, you know, the whole Scaramucci thing was not reassuring to a lot of people, and particularly for conservatives. The language that was used and everything like that was did not reflect well on the president or the White House. And so I think that a certain amount of that is people saying, you know, I don't like what I see going on there. But it's not necessarily, to me, evidence of long-term erosion for the president's agenda, and that's what really counts.
All right, I want to play a clip that this is a Charles Krauthammer last night on the panel on Special Report, changing the subject a bit. But I just want to play it, George, and then get your response to it. This is Charles Krauthammer last night on Special Report.
I just want to say that I think that was a remarkable event when the military, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, declared that a tweet is not an order, essentially ignored it, Whereas you would have thought up until now, we were saying that a tweet is an official statement from the president. Nothing has been done. I will predict that nothing will be done on this, and this will just wash away into ether. But this is a remarkable stepping up by the military as a way of saying to the commander-in-chief, you want to do it, you got to go through channels, otherwise we're not listening.
All right. He's referring, of course, to the tweet last week about reversing the Obama policy on transgenders in the military. Charles is saying that it's a remarkable response from the Pentagon, and he doesn't think it will ever be implemented. Your thoughts, George?
Well, I disagree totally with Krauthammer on that. And I have to say that I'm glad that the military doesn't respond to media and social media tweets and things like that for their orders, that they still expect a written direction or some kind of formal direction from the president. I mean, let's go back to when President Reagan was joking around and said we're going to start bombing Russia in 5 minutes as a sound test on a microphone, and it was picked up and broadcast. We certainly wouldn't want the Pentagon to have taken that as a direction they should follow. So, I think they're playing things by the book as they should, and I would expect that at some point, there's going to be a memo come over from the White House, and we conservatives ought to push to make sure that happens. I think Dr. Krauthammer's pessimism about whether that will be followed through on or not is unfounded.
I do too, George. I can't imagine that was a bridge too far. I do think that the Pentagon's response was snarky and disrespectful. I agree with you totally that they can't change policy on a tweet. But I thought their response, they should have said, as soon as we get the orders, we'll implement the president's, commander-in-chief's directive, as soon as we have it in writing. Instead, they were sort of snarky and resistant. But I can't imagine President Donald Trump not following through on something as dramatic as that. Can you?
No, I can't. And, again, that's kind of a staff type of thing where somebody needs to be tasked to write up the memo and send it over there. And if the chief of staff isn't operating on all cylinders, then that never gets done. But I would presume that General Kelly is going to have that, or Steve Bannon's going to have that on his list of things to take to General Kelly, and it is going to get done.
Yeah, I would imagine it's already well in the works. That's what I would say. I'm surprised sometimes that I think Mr. Krauthammer is so dislikes Trump and so wants to be right about his prediction that he was going to be horrible that it skews his opinions, and that's too bad.
Well, I'll never forget, about 5 or 6 o'clock on election night, Krauthammer is saying, oh, Trump's not going to win Florida, even as he's 100,000 votes ahead and is clearly going to win Florida. And at that point, I said, well, if Trump wins Florida, he's going to win the White House. And that's what happened. So.
That is what happened. And And I think, George, we're in a classic battle back and forth. I don't think there's any way that people can predict what the outcome is going to be, but those of us that are conservatives are certainly, we have enough to be encouraged, and we need to just keep fighting this battle. And George Grassley and Conservative HQ is one of those tools. Great source of information, trusted source, Conservative HQ. We're going to put a couple of their articles more on our Facebook page so that you can read them. And George, thanks for your expertise and just the time to chat with you this morning. Thanks for joining me.
It's always a pleasure, Sandy. Call anytime.
All righty. Thanks so much. All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.